Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
About this time every week, we talk to our guy, Chief Washington Correspondent for CBS News, the author of The Big Truth, Upholding Democracy in the Age of the Big Lie, couple of podcasts, The Agent of Betrayal and The Takeout, and Major Garrett is with us on KMOX. Good morning, Major.
Good morning. How is everyone?
We are doing okay. Today is the, it is ongoing right now. In fact, President Biden has just stepped to the lectern to deliver a eulogy for former President Carter on what is a solemn day in the country. We've got a lot going on. In fact, we're going to get to, but I know you're on coverage of this today. What has the day been like so far in Washington?
It's a really important day. Anytime we begin the process as a nation of memorializing a president, it's a moment to reflect on what was and what can be in America, because the presidency flows through everything about us. And the reappraisals of the Carter presidency are front and center and have been for the better part of a week and a half. There's been tremendous emphasis, understandably, on his post-presidency. But during some of the remarks today from grandson Jason, from his top domestic advisor, Stuart Eisenstadt, and others, there's been a kind of assessment that, though politically, and it's really important because politics flows through the presidency as much as anything else, Jimmy Carter's was almost a continuously unpopular presidency. Twice in his presidency, he had an approval rating of 26%, 1978 and again in 1980. So in the presidency himself, he was not viewed as productive or popular by the vast majority of our country. Nevertheless, many of his accomplishments, underappreciated or overlooked entirely at the time, live with us today. And that's always something that happens when we lay a president to rest and we go through this long 2-week process, typically, to evaluate things that we missed at the time, things that we're reappraising, things that have had a chance to live in terms of a legacy. And the Carter presidency is now front and center as we do that kind of inspection and reflection.
Major, yesterday, Trump held a closed-door meeting with Senate Republicans where I believe he proposed a big, beautiful bill, as he called it. It's a pretty.
What else would it be?
It's a big, beautiful bill.
Small and ugly? I don't think so.
And there's a lot in it. I mean, it could be everything from his no tax on tips to raising or eliminating the debt limit. What do we know about what's in there and the viability of this bill to keep moving forward?
So, for the audience's benefit, you're going to hear a lot, and if you've paid any attention to the Trump transition, you've already heard a lot. One bill or two bills. Let me try to simplify this. Currently, President-elect Trump, soon to be President Trump, will be in favor of whatever passes, by whatever means necessary. And the Senate filibuster, the 60-vote requirement, which blocks a lot of legislation, meaning you have to have a bipartisan consensus, doesn't apply to the biggest component parts of this agenda. Why? Because there is a particular means by which you can get things through the Senate through something called reconciliation. Then you only need 50 votes. Lots of things recently have passed by this mechanism, Democratic and Republican presidents. You can do this once or twice in any given budget year. So the question is, do you do all this in one bill or do you do it in two bills? That's this one or two bill question. There's a tremendous effort to make progress immediately upon Inauguration Day, soon after, on border security issues. If you put those in a reconciliation bill, you can do that within 2 or 3 weeks. That's the two-bill strategy. You do border first, put money, resources on that question, early victory, quick victory lap, emphasizing this issue that was, if not front and center, very important to the Trump campaign in 2024. Or the one-bill strategy is you wait on the border stuff and you tuck it in with raising the debt ceiling, with extending the Trump tax cuts, possibly adding other tax cuts, possibly adding tariffs. into one huge bill that has many, many, many dimensions to it. If you do that, you probably can't do that legislatively until sometime in April. And why do I say April? Well, it takes a long time to write a bill of this complexity. Also, early April is when the special elections for the House members that Trump has plucked out of the House Republican Conference and put into his cabinet will be held. Adding those Republican seats in the House of Representatives will give Mike Johnson, the Speaker, a little more breathing room. And as we learned from the hair's breadth election of Speaker Johnson, he needs every vote he can get because one defection can put things into jeopardy. Having two or three more House Republicans added after the special elections in early April would give the big bill strategy more running room in the House. The question is, can Trump wait until April to put a big victory on the board? These are the kind of things that are being jostled back and forth. He will do whatever he needs to do and agree to whatever strategy gets the most done the quickest, and that's not clear yet.
Elon Musk and his Department of Government Efficiency organization, where he pledged to cut $2 trillion from the deficit, which is a pretty lofty number. He's sort of walking that back now. I think reality is hitting him in the face a bit. So what's going to be the reality of this department?
Look, first of all, it's not a department. It's not even an office. It's not even a laptop, okay? It's nothing. It's an entity that could be created, invested with some sort of legitimacy once President Trump takes office. But we don't know. It's not going to be an appendage of the White House. At least they've said so far. So it might just be ideas that Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy send to the president informally and that he sends to Congress. Now, there's a way you could legislatively create a Department of Government Efficiency and say you're not going to have a big office, but here's what we're going to do. If you recommend it to Congress, we promise you no amendments and a straight up or down vote on whatever you recommend. Why do I point out that particular approach? Well, a long time ago, many, many years ago, when we were deciding to close military bases in this country because we no longer needed them after the end of the Cold War, they created something called the Base Realignment and Closure Commission. And the only way that that proposal on a base closure could come before Congress was a strict up or down vote, no amendments. Why did they do that? Because if you amend it, then everyone gets a chance to pick it apart. And the commission had an idea, no, we don't need this base. Here's the reason why. Vote yes or no to keep it open or keep it closed. That's the only question. That's the only option. When you do it that way, things that are resistant to political closure get closed. So you could do that. You could invest this DOGE process with a formula in Congress where it's a straight up or down vote. Absent that, nothing is going to happen. So Congress needs to be a part of this conversation just procedurally to make anything happen. The second reality is most of the spending in the federal government is not waste, fraud, and abuse. It just isn't. It's Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. Are there things in there that can be tightened? Yes. But let's just take Medicare for a quick example. You want to tighten Medicare? You know how you do that? Well, you lower reimbursements for doctors. Okay. That means doctors get paid less for visits or procedures. All right. That's a signal to doctors. They don't have to participate in Medicare. If they don't like the reimbursement rates, they get out. What does that create? That creates shortages of available care, which creates what? A pretty rapid, instantaneous political problem. There are ways to iron this out, but it takes a long time to iron out, and it's not instantaneous. One last quick statistic. I'm going to ask you a question. When you think of the federal workforce, can you think of the largest allotted federal workforce for any given agency? Take a stab at it.
Department of Defense?
Nope. Veterans Affairs. Veterans Affairs, 21%. Of the civilian workforce. Veterans Affairs, okay? Let me ask you another question. What percentage of the federal workforce, full-time employees, FTEs, do you believe resides in the greater Washington, D.C. area? Out of 100%, what percentage do you believe resides in the greater Washington, D.C. area?
5.
I feel like it's going to be low.
Yeah.
It's 20%.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not nothing. It's not nothing. But it's 20%. The other 80% are distributed around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this idea that we've got to tackle and bring to heel this grotesque Washington-based bureaucracy statistically isn't representative. Matter of fact, Bill Clinton, when he was president, and Al Gore, when they reinvented government, if you remember that, moved a lot of the federal workforce to contractors who are not even full-time federal government employees. They work as contractors. Most of those contractors do not reside in Washington, D.C. They're dispersed all over the country. And so these are some of the fundamentals that make numbers like $1 trillion or $2 trillion sound great, but exceedingly difficult to accomplish.
Yeah, Major, as you mentioned, like talking about cutting excess spending, of course. I mean, that sounds great. We want to cut excess spending.
We do, sure. Yeah, and it's doable. I'm not saying it's not doable. I'm just saying it's much harder to do than people believe or is communicated to them on the X platform or Facebook or anywhere else.
Right. And also the target is often the wrong one. You mentioned the federal workforce. Brookings Institute said that according to their polls, most Americans believe foreign aid is about 25% of the federal budget. They say it should be 10% of the budget. They're like, we need to get it down to 10%. In reality, it is less than 1% of the budget.
Correct.
Ukraine is not bankrupting us.
No. Now, there's a legitimate question about munitions and things that we're producing and sending and how we can be have our stockpiles ready. That's a legitimate question. But guess what you have to do? You have to spend more to do that. All I'm saying is everyone is in favor of government efficiency. Achieving government efficiency is much harder in practice than it is in reality. And one last thing, as we are thinking about President Carter. President Carter, during his 4 years, did four things, really, that we live with now, on making government more efficient that we don't really associated with President Carter. He deregulated the airlines. The reason Southwest Airlines exists and any low-cost carrier that's ever come since the 70s is because Carter deregulated the airlines. He also deregulated trucking and rails. That propelled FedEx monstrously into its future and then created rivals like DHL and UPS. The modern shipping world, Amazon and everything else, is a direct reflection of that decision. He also began the process of deregulating telecommunications, creating the entire cable industry, which led to streaming and everything else. Those things were ways to make government more efficient, to get government out of the way of the private economy and allow things to prosper. Reagan didn't do that, though most people think Reagan did that. Jimmy Carter actually did that. So those are ways government can get involved. Mm-hmm. They're not so much dollars and cents, but unleashing things. Carter was ahead of his time in all three.
Tell us who's on the podcast this week, Major.
So related to that, we recorded this December of last year, not 2024, December of 2023. Jonathan Alter wrote a great biography. I highly recommend it. If you have any interest in Jimmy Carter at all, and I'm not suggesting everyone does or even a large percentage of your audience does. But if you are, the book, His Very Best, Jimmy Carter, A Life by Jonathan Alter, is a tremendous biography. It is critical in places, laudatory in others, comprehensive in every way. We recorded this more than a year ago because we thought, as many people reasonably did, Jimmy Carter's passing was, you know, it could be any week now. Well, he went to live on 13 more months after we recorded this, but Jonathan Alter is our guest, and I've re-listened to the interview. It holds up really well. It's a great show.
Major Garrett, we appreciate you as always, and if you are still a Chargers fan, which I'm not sure, good luck to you.
I am not.
Oh, you're off?
I am not.
Okay. All right. So
I want them to lose and lose as rapidly and in the most humiliating fashion possible.
Go Houston Texans.
Wow.
There you go.
Yes, I have no NFL team anymore because my NFL team left the hometown I grew up in, so it's all Missouri Tigers 24/7.
Well, I got a team for you if you'd like to adopt one, and you can be miserable with me.
And that team is?
The Bears.
He's a Chicago Bears fan, Major.
Would you like to join
Chicago
me?
Chicago Bears.
No, you know, look, seriously, because all my friends have asked me about this when the Chargers left San Diego. What team are you going to adopt? I'm like, I was a Charger fan for 55 years. I'm not going to adopt any other team because, hello,
well,
all those years I rooted against all those other teams.
You could pick a team that sucks like mine so you won't be bandwagoning.
No. No, my Sundays are much less complicated.
Okay, great.
Major, I just have to say, this is how insane Ronge gets his Twitter feed when the Bears lose. Who did you tweet? The NBC.
Oh, Andrea Mitchell?
He tweeted at Andrea Mitchell when the Bears lost. Like, what's she going to do?
She said something about how great the Washington Commanders played at the end of the game. I was like, yeah, Andrea, it's not because the Bears suck. I don't think she saw it.
Norm O'Donnell's next? I don't know.
I do think Caleb Williams is going to work out, and that's going to be a great draft pick, and I do think the Bears' future is brighter than it is right now, but that's not saying much.
No, it does to me. Thank you, Major.
All right. Thank be you. Good, guys.
That is Major Garrett, Chief Washington Correspondent for CBS News. Listen to the Takeout podcast or Agent of Betrayal. You can catch them both on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, The Big Truth, Upholding Democracy in the Age of the Big Lie.